thoughts upon the subject from the Old Testament, the places your feet have trodden. We find that in the time when the Israelites were journeying toward the promised land, and the Lord had told them about the land flowing with milk and honey, and how he had special care over it, he wrote these things about it. For the land whither thou goest in to possess it is not as the land of Egypt, from whence ye came out, where thou sowest thy seed and waterest it with thy foot as a garden of herbs. See, that arrangement seems to have been of the Lord. This is the 10th verse of Deuteronomy 11. And as we read that, we see that it pictures very well the world and its efforts by its own means and its own brains to try and get along. Waterest it with thy foot as a garden of herbs. But the land whither ye go in to possess it is a land of hills and valleys, and drinketh water of the rain of heaven, a land which the Lord thy God careth for. The eyes of the Lord thy God are always upon it, from the beginning of the year, even unto the end of the year. And it shall come to pass, if ye hearken diligently unto the commandments which I command you this day, to love the Lord your God, and serve him with all your heart and all your soul, that I will give you the rain of your land in his due season, the first rain and the latter rain, that thou mayest gather in thy corn and thy wine and thine oil, and I will send grass in the fields for thy cattle, that thou mayest eat and be full. Take heed to yourselves that your heart be not deceived, and ye turn aside and serve other gods and worship them. For then the Lord's wrath be kindled against you, and he shut up the heaven, that there be no rain, and the land yield not her fruit, unless ye perish quickly from off the good land, which the Lord your God giveth you. Therefore shall ye lay up these my words in your heart and in your soul, and bind them for a sign upon your hand, that they may be as frontlets between your eyes. And ye shall teach them to your children, speaking of them when thou sittest in thine house and walkest by the way, when thou liest down, when thou risest up. And write them upon the doorposts of thine houses and upon thy gates, that your days may be multiplied, and the days of your children, in the land which the Lord sware unto your fathers to give them, as the days of heaven upon the earth. See, those will be 1,000-year days. For if ye shall diligently keep all these commandments which I command you, to do them, to love the Lord your God, to walk in all his ways and cleave unto him, then will the Lord drive out before you all these nations, and ye shall possess greater nations and mightier than yourselves. Every place whereon the soles of your feet shall tread shall be yours. From the wilderness and Lebanon, from the river Euphrates, even unto the uttermost sea shall your coast be. There shall no man be able to stand before you, for the Lord your God shall lay the fear of you and the dread of you upon all the land that ye shall tread upon, as he hath said unto you. We see there laid before them the great promises that all their land and their experiences therein would be under God's care, that he would see that everything that would help them in their life, in their needs of every sort, all their conditions would be provided by the Lord. And that if they obeyed, then they'd get the fullness, the richness of the land and God's blessing and companionship. But if they would not, then he would withhold those blessings. And he pointed out that one way to keep these things was to write them upon the tables of their heart, upon their hands, and as frontlet between their eyes. And that's repeated in the book of Proverbs. And as they do that, you see, that would make their minds and their thoughts and their words more or less in harmony with that, and that the Lord would thereby take care of them. But now he said that you've got to do something on your behalf, that this land would be yours, but all the land that the soles of your feet shall tread upon, that shall be yours. If you won't tread upon it, it won't be yours. But you must go and do the walking, the length and breadth and the struggle and the fighting, and the Lord will give you the land. Now that's a wonderful promise, and it's reiterated again in the first chapter of Joshua, when Joshua took over in the place of Moses. I've said that. Put this out for the benefit of that. Joshua, the first chapter. And the fourth verse, every place that the sole of your feet shall tread upon, that have I given unto you, as I said unto Moses. And then again in Joshua 14, when Caleb came to receive his heritage, we read the same words. He said in the seventh verse, Joshua 14, 40 years old was I when Moses, the servant of the Lord, sent me from Kadesh Barnea to espy out the land. And I brought him word again, as it was in mine heart. Nevertheless, my brethren that went up with me made the heart of the people melt. But I wholly followed the Lord my God. And Moses sware on that day, saying, surely the land whereon thy feet have trodden shall be thine inheritance, and thy children's forever, because thou hast wholly followed the Lord thy God. And now, behold, the Lord hath kept me alive, as he said, these 45 years, even since the Lord spake this word unto Moses, while the children of Israel wandered in the wilderness. And now I am this day 85 years old. As yet I am as strong this day as I was in the day that Moses sent me. As my strength was then, even so is my strength now for war, both to go out and to come in. So now, therefore, give me this mountain whereof the Lord spake in that day. For thou heardest in that day how the Anakim were there, and the cities were great and fenced. If so be the Lord will be with me, then I shall be able to drive them out, as the Lord said. And so we find that he obtained the land on the neighborhood of Hebron. John, in other places we'll come across that again. But we see that this land of Canaan then is beautifully described by the Lord and is illustrated, therefore, in two ways to the Christian. First, it's a picture of heaven as the land of promise beyond the River Jordan, which represents the death experience. And in that land we see abundance of everything under God's control that could be desired. And then again, apart from that, it represents the consecrated condition in which there are battles and wars and strivings to be fought and endured in order that we might attain the possession of the land. And you remember it took them 6 years. And while they were a somewhat obedient nation, they didn't drive out the inhabitants anywhere. And the result was the inhabitants mingled with them and often led them astray to worship their gods and made them trouble. So we find that all of this expresses the statement that this land was specially prepared of the Lord and is like the heavenly reward that is offered to the saints. We read part of Deuteronomy 11. He says in the 8th chapter some more interesting things about it. Verses 7 to 9. For the Lord thy God bringeth thee into a good land, a land of brooks of water, of fountains and depths that spring out of the valleys and the hills, a land of wheat and barley and vine and trees, fig trees, and pomegranates, a land of olive oil and honey, a land wherein thou shalt eat bread without scarceness. Thou shalt not lack anything in it, a land whose stones are iron, and out of whose hills thou mayest dig brass, or more properly copper. When thou hast eaten of thy full, then thou shalt bless the Lord thy God for the good land which he hath given thee. And he warns them that their heart must not be lifted up and forget him. So we find again the statement of the glory of that land. And then in Ezekiel 20, he gives us a still further intimation that there's something special about the land of Palestine. In the 6th verse, Ezekiel 20, it says, in the day that I lifted up mine hand unto them, to bring them forth of the land of Egypt, into a land that I had espied for them, flowing with milk and honey, which is the glory of all lands. Note that. And repeat it again. In the 15th verse, yet also I lifted up mine hand unto them in the wilderness, that I would not bring them into the land which I had given them, flowing with milk and honey, which is the glory of all lands. Evidently, that land is specially rich under the Lord's provision and will be given to the children of Israel and will be one of the most glorious places on the earth's surface. So we can realize that there's a great deal of interest in the present time, a good reason for the eyes of all nations to be upon that land and to watch the preparation for the kingdom. Now, in regard to this land, you remember he promised it to them. And many people find that the way the children of Israel slaughtered those people and killed them, old and young, and destroyed their fruits and their cities, that that was an awful thing to do. And that it isn't like Jesus' method that he asked us to use. And that is true, it is not. But the Lord tells us why he dealt so with that land. In Deuteronomy 12, coming back to that chapter, verses 29 to 32. When the Lord thy God shall cut off the nations from before thee, whither thou goest to possess them, and thou succeedest them, and dwellest in their land, take heed to thyself, that thou be not snared by following them, after that they be destroyed from before thee, and thou shalt, and that thou inquire not after their gods, saying, how do these nations serve their gods? Even so will I do likewise. Thou shalt not do so unto the Lord thy God, for every abomination to the Lord, which he hateth, have they done unto their gods, for even their sons and their daughters they have burnt in the fire to their gods. In another scripture, Leviticus 18, verses 24 to 28. Defile not ye yourselves in any of these things, for in all these the nations are defiled which I cast out before you, and the land is defiled. Therefore do I visit the iniquity thereof upon it, and the land itself vomiteth out there its inhabitants. You see, the nations of these lands had become so wicked that the time had come to stop it, even as he did with the Sodomites. And he might have destroyed them as he did Sodom. But he didn't do that. He used the Israelites as an example and a typical lesson to us in order to destroy them and also to illustrate to us the necessity of destroying the powers of evil that have a grip upon ourselves. And it was a very wonderful way in which he used the children of Israel with regard to that. So we can see, as he said, the land vomited them forth. And he said to the children of Israel in the 28th verse, that the land, he says, ye shall not do these things that they do, that the land spew not you out also when ye defile it, as it spewed out the nations that were before you. And so the Lord tells them that if they do that, he will likewise cast them out of the land. So you see, the Lord executed or used the children of Israel as executors of his judgments and punishments upon that evil nation. And in that way gave us many lessons that are valuable to us. We find in Deuteronomy 9 another statement of it.
In the verses 5 and 6. Speak not thou in thine heart after that the Lord thy God hath cast about from before thee, saying, for my righteousness the Lord hath brought me in to possess this land. But for the wickedness of these nations the Lord hath drive them out before thee. Not for thy righteousness, or for the uprightness of thine heart dost thou go in to possess their land, but for the wickedness of those nations before the Lord thy God doth drive them out from before thee, and that he may perform the word which the Lord sware unto thy fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And so he points out that they must not get lifted up in heart and imagine these things. And then the 7th chapter also, verses 25 and 6 of Deuteronomy. He says, the graven images of their gods shall ye burn with fire. Thou shalt not desire the silver nor gold that is on them, nor take it unto thee, lest thou be snared therein. For it is an abomination to the Lord thy God. You see, the Lord expresses his hatred of all those things that they did, even to the extent of burning their sons and daughters in the fire to their idols, by telling them that they must not retain or hold or take for themselves anything that pertained unto those, neither the metal, the gold, or silver, precious as it might look. They must not have any of it. And when you remember the statements also, that when they went into the land, they must not eat of the fruit of the land for 3 years. That enables us to see how God detests evil and everything connected with it, and that we should learn likewise. to hate those things, and not the sinner, but the sin, and to strive and avoid everything connected with it. Now, as we said, the conquering of that land was a picture, as Paul tells us in 1 Corinthians 10, of its church conquering the various tendencies of evil and Satan's hold upon them in our experiences on this side of the veil. And in the 10th chapter, verses 6 to 11, he tells us about that, that all these things happened unto them for types. 1 Corinthians 10, that is. In destroying, he mentions their idolatry and their other evils that they did. And he said, neither let us tempt Christ, as some of them also tempted, and were destroyed of serpents. Neither murmur ye, as some of them were murmured and destroyed of the destroyer. Now, all these things happened unto them for ensamples or types, and they are written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the world or ages are come. Wherefore, let him that thinketh he standeth take heed, lest he fall. And so all of those things were written, you see, for our examples, our learning, and as Romans says, that whatsoever things were written before time were written for our learning, that we through patience and comfort of the Scriptures might have hope. And so putting all these things together, we realize that all those experiences that they had in conquering that land are lessons to us in our efforts to conquer them. Now in Numbers 13, 28-30, coming back to that. Numbers 13, and 28-30. It's the report of the spies. They went and came to Moses and to Aaron, to all the congregation of the children of Israel, and brought back word unto them, and to all the congregation, showed them the fruit of the land. And they told him, and said, we came into the land whither thou sentest us, and surely it floweth with milk and honey, and this is the fruit of it. Nevertheless, the people be strong that dwell in the land, and the cities are walled and very great, and moreover we saw the children of Anak there. The Amalekites dwell in the land of the south, and the Hittites and Jebusites and Amorites dwell in the mountains, and Canaanites dwell in by the sea, by the coast of Jordan. And Caleb stilled the people before Moses. You see, he saw the influence that these men who were frightened and who had not the proper faith gave as their report. And Caleb tried to encourage them and said, let us go up at once and possess it, for we are well able to overcome it. And so the children of Israel listened as they do now. They'd rather listen to demagogues than listen to those who intend to do them good. They crucify their benefactors and they build great monuments to their slaughterers and those who exploit them. And it was so then. The congregation listened to those who had an evil report and somehow or other didn't seem to be able to grasp the, by faith, the promises that God had made to them in their ears. They all knew about it. But these reports culminated in the 33rd verse. They brought up an evil report of the land which they had searched unto the children of Israel. The land through which we have gone to search it is a land that eateth up the inhabitants thereof, and all the people that we saw in it are men of great stature. And there we saw the giants, the sons of Anak, which come of the giants, and we were in our own sight as grasshoppers, and so we were in their sight. And they used the word for giants that had been used of the giants before the flood. And the remembrance of those terrible experiences were fresh in the minds of those people at that day. And it just took all the courage and strength out of them. If these were related to those in any way, they thought they would have no power in any way to overcome them. But it took faith. And so, the only two that gave that good report, Caleb and Joshua, were the only two that were allowed out of that great number to enter into the land of Canaan, indicating that by that faith, that is the thing that overcometh. That is the thing that enables us to go ahead, to step out upon the promises of God and tackle those things which do seem to so threatening. Walled cities, entrenched giants and peoples,
and with chariots of iron and so forth. And as we think of those things, we're like Peter, who started out on the water, and as long as he looked at the Lord, he walked on the water. But the minute he took his eyes off and was frightened by the way the waves were circling about him there, he lost his grip. He lost his faith and began to sink. So we see our Lord's dealing with this is a matter of faith, because he is developing a class that will be so certain, so familiar with the promises of God and with his character, that there won't be a shadow or a trace of doubt in their minds. They'll be able to go and do anything because they know that God will empower them to do it, whatever he sends them to do. But this takes time and training, a building up. Now about these spies. You see, we are like spies sent ahead of the world into the promised land to tell others what it is about life, and whether it's worth the effort to obtain it. And how do we give a report? You know, we can talk and we can sing, but our actions are the real things. As the saying often is, that your actions speak so loud I can't hear what you say. They're contrary to it. And so the thought is that the world is listening to the way and watching the way Christians are act, to see whether the things they tell them about are really worth the sacrifice. And what kind of a report do we give? Do we indicate the long faces and solemn experiences, solemn statements that we wish we hadn't done it? Or do we feel and give the impression that we're glad to have done it, that we never were so happy in our lives before, that these years since we've known the Lord are the best and happiest and richest years, and that before we knew him, we account as lost time that we might have enjoyed and didn't? Well, you see, the world will begin to realize, if they see that, that there must be something in that. That when their opportunity comes to go in and possess the land in their instance, they'll try hard, and by that very example, they'll realize that God will help them if they'll just step on it. And that's the thought, wheresoever thy foot shall trod. And what is that meaning to us? It means that when we have the opportunity laid before us of doing anything, we have the Lord's promises and assurances that he will help us in every way. But we realize that those things are difficult. We may have tried them before with no success, because we had our own strength only to depend upon. But now when we go forth, we have the assurance of God's promise. And if we then step forth on faith and try it, we begin to realize that somehow, while we can't see it and we can't feel it, nevertheless, the power is given us there, and the Lord does help us. The call for the work was wonderful for that. And so is the pilgrim work, and so is our daily work. If we step out upon the promises of God, we find the thing is not nearly so terrible, nor so big, nor so hard as we thought it was going to be. In fact, the world recognizes that nothing is so bad when you really tackle it as it threatened to be when you were looking at it. And so we read about Caleb and his experiences. He was one of those. And the statement in Judges, the first chapter, verse 9 to 15. It says, afterwards the children of Judah went down to fight against the Canaanites that dwell in the mountain, and in the south, and in the valley. And Judah went against the Canaanites that dwelt in Hebron. Now the name of Hebron before was Kirjatharba, and they slew Sheshai, and Ahiman, and Talmai. And these were the giants, the names of the sons, three sons of Anak, whom the giants had brought forth. From thence he went against the inhabitants of Debir, and the name of Debir before was Kirjath-Sepher. And Caleb said, he that smiteth Kirjath-Sepher and taketh it, to him will I give Aksah my daughter to wife. And Othniel, the son of Kenaz, Caleb's younger brother, took it, and he gave in Aksah his daughter to wife. Now you see, they united and worked together. And by means of that, they slew the three sons of the giants. And not in their own strength, but in the strength of the Lord, as Caleb said, if the Lord be with him, then he would conquer and cast out those giants. And he did. So we find in Joshua 14:67, which we read partly, in Caleb's request for the field and the mountain that he his feet had trodden when he went there. And note that that was the point. He had gone over the land, and that's fire. And the Lord told him that what section of the land, which is around Hebron, he had placed his feet upon, that land should be his. Now he goes on here to tell us in Joshua 15, verses 13 to 19. He said, unto Caleb the son of Jephunneh he gave a part among the children of Judah, according to the commandment of the Lord to Joshua, even of the city of Arba, the father of Anak, which city is Hebron. And Caleb drove thence the three sons of Anak, Shishiar, and Ahiman, and Talmai, the children of Anak, and went up from thence to the inhabitants of Debir, and the name of Debir before was Kirjath Sefer. And Caleb said, he that smiteth Kirjath Sefer, and taketh it to him while I give Aksa my daughter to wife. Well, that's the same as we read in the other part. So he conquered it through the reverence and trust that he gave, had in his own heart and mind, and expressed unto others. Now, in connection with this, in Judges, the first chapter, and the verses 9 to 15, there was a little part that I didn't read there, which is very interesting. Judges 1. And Othniel the son of Kenaz, Caleb's younger brother, took it, and he gave him Aksa his daughter to wife. And it came to pass when she came to him, that she moved him to ask of her father a field. And she lighted from off the ass, and Caleb said to her, what wilt thou? And she said unto him, give me a blessing, for thou hast given me a thou hast given me a south land, give me also springs of water. And Caleb gave her the upper springs and the nether springs. Now she obtained for Caleb a south land. You see, that is a land that sloped toward the south, and got the benefit of the early sun, and would bring forth good crops. But she lacked the water that she needed, and so she asked for that. And he gave her the upper and the nether springs in that neighborhood. Now that neighborhood all around Bethlehem and to the south of Jerusalem was called Ephratah. And that name means fruitful or bearing. It's the same root as the original name of the river Euphrates, which is called Phrat. The name Euphrates is just the Greek form of it. And the river, the land did bear a very fruitful products. That is, it was yielding pomegranates and figs and
very many of the ordinary grains, and also other trees as they were imported in Solomon's day. And in all that land we see that the Lord helped those who went forth on his promises. Now the lesson to us is the same, that the Lord has a certain place in the kingdom for each individual, you and I. He places the members of the body as it pleases him. And in the cutting of the stone, which is one picture of the stones of Solomon's temple, each one had a given place for which it was fitted. And in the members of the body, the same illustration, each has a certain place in that body. He said, let no man take thy crown, you see. There is a crown allotted, and a place in the body, or a place in the temple, for each of God's people. Now you need for that position certain training. The Lord selected you because you had in your makeup tendencies that someone in the world is going to have, or does have already. And if you go forth in the promises of God, and in faith in his power and strength, and strive day by day to conquer and overcome those tendencies, no matter how little success you seem to have, don't give up, that's the point. Keep at it, and you'll find that that very persistence will often wear the enemy out, and gain you the advantage over a period of time. And the result will be, you'll find yourselves overcoming. Not completely, not perfectly, but gaining somewhat. You look over your past life, and if you've been any length of time in the truth, you ought to be able to realize that there's a change there. You don't love the old things that you used to love. They don't have the hold, nor the grip upon them, upon you.
and public opinion don't stir you and drive you the way it used to, and the pleasures that the world used to have and that you shared with them don't have the attraction that they used to. Well, why? Because you've gained more of God's Holy Spirit, more of that spirit of the heavenly realms of the land of Canaan. You know, the Bible speaks, I think it's in the 19th Isaiah, where he says there'll be five cities in the land of Egypt that'll speak the language of Canaan. You see, there is a language, a manner of speaking among God's people. And the thought is, as I watched Brother Russell at the Bible House table answering questions, he would always give his best effort to give the most correct answer the nearest he could. Often he'd shut his eyes so that the things around him would not distract him. And you could tell as you watched him and listened to him day after day that his language was more and more the language of the Scriptures, unconsciously so. And that should be the case. We should more and more, as we say those verses over to ourselves, get the language of the Bible into our own manner of speech. And as we do that, we see we are getting accustomed to the thoughts of the Lord and the expression of those thoughts. And as we use them, we'll find that they will accustom to us and, as it were, get it natural in our minds and hearts to trust the Lord. They'll make it easier for us to have that confidence. I remember very many occasions in the call for the word when there was hard sometimes outlook for knowing just where the next meal would come from. But the Lord provided. I remember one time in Corinna, Maine, that we didn't have any place to stay and not much wherewith to pay for it. And one man whom we didn't know at all heard that we were coming into that region, and he and his wife were going somewhere, so he came and said, "You can have that house and the use of it while I'm gone." Well, he didn't know me. He'd probably heard something about me, but I didn't know him either. And there was a perfect stranger offering you the use of that home while you were in that vicinity. Could use the fire to cook with and the kitchen there. I didn't disturb the rest of his house, just used that place to abide in. And I never saw him after I got through. He just said, "When you get through, lock up the house and go." Well, the Lord provided. And on another day, when I had tried to go through the mud with my bicycle and somehow it hit me here and lamed me, and I had to quit walking round for a while, an Italian there in Corinna offered me the use of his horse and buggy to go round with, and he was a Roman Catholic too. He asked me to come into his home, and he and his wife were just as lovely as anybody could be to me. It seemed that just the earnestness of striving to live as the Lord would live you, have you live, and giving them the testimony as much as they'd accepted, had its influence and its effect. And the minister of that church, the Lord was, he was himself inclined to be a Methodist, and everybody went to that church, the only one that was.
And he asked me to give two lectures to his congregation, and we did. And so their influence went out all around there. I remember late in the pilgrimage out on the Pacific coast, I was way off from Brooklyn. They'd given me enough to go on there, to get out there. But it took about 4 days for the letter to get from the Pacific coast to New York and 4 days again to get it back. And there wasn't any airmail in those days. It all had to go by train. And so the funds got kind of low. And I didn't like to ask anybody for it because one doesn't, you know. But I took it to the Lord in prayer. And I said, "You know this situation, and that I need funds and so forth." And lo and behold, a day or two afterwards, came a check for $50 from way up in the state of Maine to pay for books that I had not sold and left there just for that purpose. And they bought the books and sent me the check. Well, you see, I didn't remember anything about it, but there was the means. And in many ways, the Lord provides for his people. If you just go forth and trust him, that's what he asks, the faith. Well, you see, if you do go forth and trust him, you conquer those gigantic habits of wrong or twisted thoughts and actions that have written them into your nature because you were a member of the human race and were more or less under the influence of the satanic influence that goes all through the world, corrupt public opinion. And as you strove to overcome them, you put out your foot. You stepped and trusted God's promises.
and you found that he was more than equal to the occasion. And the more you do that, the more familiar you get to the Lord. There was some warmth,
like this expressed here, that is, the habit was entrenched in your flesh. It had a protection of custom and habit all around it. And you found that as you tried to break that down, it would crop up every little while, and you'd do it and say it before you thought of it. Well, don't get discouraged. Repeat again and again, as the New Testament says there, in, I think it is Colossians, set your affections on things above, where Christ sitteth on the right hand of God. Well, you set them there, but they fall off. You can't quite change your love from the things of earth completely over in no effort at all or no time at all. You find that takes a gradual and continued and persistent work. And we learn from doctors that these old habits are just deepened channels of the brain, the gray matter. And that these are tied in with other ways so that a habitual course of action follows automatically. And our effort is to erase them. Take, for instance, if we've been able to say spiteful words, to give pieces of our mind to people, and to say things we ought not, to repartee, the world thinks that's the proper thing, and that you aren't worth much if you can't do it. And so we have that habit. When somebody would say a cutting thing to us, or we did something they did something we didn't like, why, we'd say something harsh to them. It would pop out. We didn't have to think of it. And so that wrote itself into our mind, deepened the rut there. Well, the new will said that we must do that, and every time that would come up, we tried to check it, and at first we didn't have much success. But every effort we made deepened the new depression, the new mark,
and likewise made the other grow a little shallow. And as we kept after it time and again, the new line, the new routine of action would begin to get a little easier, a little more automatic, and by and by it would come that would be our habitual routine of action along that line, and the old habit would be gone. No more bothers. We may be able to see a few of those instances where we overcame.
And so we find that as we persistently step out on the promises of God, we overcome those things, and so we realize that we have nothing to fear, no matter what it is. If there do seem to be giants of public opinion, and the great church systems that threaten to ostracize us in the neighborhood, and even to the extent sometimes of not allowing us to get a job. But nevertheless, if we persistently stay with the Lord, He'll arrange and take care of all those things. And we find the more we do that, the greater grows our confidence and our trust in the Lord,
so that the time comes when we can go anywhere or do anything in the strength of the Lord. As the Apostle says, I can do all things through Christ that strengtheneth me. We don't do it in our own effort.
And somehow or other the Lord does that work for us. He prepared all about that check that came for me. And likewise, the horse and buggy and the sermons and other things. And so he asks us to go forth. Well, you see, the result is that we are overcoming things and traits that the world will by and by try to do, to root those same things out. We're doing it now when Satan is loose, and when it's hard to do, when it costs us something to do it, when Satan and all the influences around us at work pressing in upon us and trying by that very pressure to discourage us. The world won't have that. They'll have good influences all around us. But you see, we are learning those very things so that by and by, when we win our place in the kingdom, will be able to use that knowledge of God's power and the power of His love to overcome those tendencies to show some poor human being on the earth how we went through that experience and encourage him and tell him the same story so that he'll be able to do it. So you see what he means, that wheresoever your foot shall trod, that shall be your lamp. He means that these experiences through which we go our necessary training
for the place in the body which we shall hold, and that place will be ours by treading upon it. That is, by going forth in the strength of the Lord and overcoming the tendencies that we particularly find combating us. And as we do it, we'll be preparing ourselves by and by to help and assist the world. And so that every kind of person in the world, every kind of weakness, every kind of tendency, will find someone in the little flock who's been through it, and knows how in every step of the way to help this one to overcome it.
So when you find these difficult and hard things happening to you, don't be surprised. It means that the Lord is sending you an opportunity to further overcome and fit yourself for that glorious inheritance that is going to be under His special care of everything desirable. And as we realize this method He takes in fitting us and giving us all these trials and testings, we see that it has a double effect. It not only prepares us to help others in that way, but it also enables us in ourselves to develop the mind and the faculties so that we can enjoy everything to the utmost limit, because we'll have the divine nature then. And the Lord tells us that that is without limit, and that all these powers of mind and body will then be given to the utmost enjoyment, the greatest delight, the greatest happiness that we can possibly have. Well, now, the capacity for happiness differs from the angels and mankind and the other grades of angels, as even as their capacity and ability vary. And so mankind will be able also to enter into all the delights that their nature can hold, and only as they likewise learn to overcome. And the Lord gives us these lessons to show and teach us, too, how sympathetic and patient and kind our God is, and how He shares all these tribulations with us, and will help us through the waters, through the fires, through all the difficult ways. And in that way, we learn more about Him, and we develop a crystallization for character that enables us to despise, to find an abhorrence, despising of all of those things that, as it were, you know how you go and perhaps to a musical or to some of these songs and hymns that we sing. And sometimes then through your mind as you think of what those words mean.
You see, that music is finding a responsive chord in your mind. And as you use that melody to express your thoughts to the Lord, it's praise to Him. For all those qualities, you see, will be developed in their richness and fullness, so that you can get the greatest amount of joy out of them. And then the Lord tells us something else. He tells us that he that overcometh, will I give to him a white stone with a new name written that no man knoweth, save he that receiveth it. That stone and the name written therein seems to illustrate or to symbolize an experience, perhaps a series of experiences, that they are known only to the Lord and ourselves. It's a personal tie between the Creator, the Son, and His church. And that, he says, no man knows it. It's too deep, too rich, too personal and private to share with anyone. They wouldn't understand, but the Lord understands, and we understand. And that deepens and enriches the tie between us. So that these will be like persons who have gone through the battles and the struggles of life, side by side and hand in hand, and they'll know each other thoroughly. No outside ones that lie by lies or misrepresentation change their voice or their opinion. They know each other. And so we want it to be with us. So we need to step out to trust God and to make these attempts, whatever the Lord tells us. Now, when I went to the call for to work, I was brought up to mind my own business and expect other people to mind theirs. And I had no idea, no aptitude, no inclination to go and knock on a person's door and tell them about something I had to sell. I remember long before I got the truth, I went to market, trying to sell some produce, and I brought every bit of it back home. I wouldn't have to give it away, because I had no salesmanship, no way of making the other person think he wanted it, whether he really did or not. And that's the idea of salesmanship now, you know, that high-class salesmanship. And at the present time and ever, we don't want that attitude. We want to tell them the truth and have them enjoy it, because we know it's the very thing they want, if we can only tell them in such a way that they can see it. Now, sometimes they can't. Sometimes they have to have a bitter experience of their own to open their eyes. But if we be patient, there will be a very, as it were, influence go out from our being, in the voice, the tone of it, in the glance of the eyes, that tells them you mean what you say. That you're not just reciting a little piece. That you mean that you have something that you want them to take in. And on the basis of that, many of the Lord's people have sold the volumes, when if they had just used smart salesmanship, they wouldn't have done so.
See, we're seeking for a class. We love the truth. We don't want that salesmanship that makes them take it when they want it not.
We want them to take it because they see something in it that will be a blessing to them. And so according to our faith, our appreciation of wisdom, study, and prayer, and benefit of the class, and we want to go through all these experiences because in them he goes with us, and we are fitting ourselves from those for those glorious places which shall be ours if we overcome. And we have these lessons very precious to us. The Lord helps us in many ways. He told about sending about the hornets and all the other things. He made the waters of Jordan back up for them. He made the hailstones come down upon their enemies and slew more than the Israelites did. All those things he works, and they're pictures of how the Lord will work for us in ways we cannot foresee or cannot understand. But the assurance and the facts are there. And I've tried them, and I know that God is able to do them. So if I should have a little physical difficulty, I just take it to the Lord, tell him to take care of it, and forget about it. He'll take care of it if it's his will. If it is not his will, that's all right, too. We know that we have to go sometime, and the manner of going, the time of the going, should be left in the Lord's hand, and he'll take care of it. And so with all things. And in the 127th Psalm, he says, it's in vain for you to rise up early and to sit up late and eat the bread of sorrows, for so he giveth his beloved sleep. And we want that perfect trust in him. Thank you.